Welcome back, everyone. It is Monday, December 22nd. So we are right in the thick of Christmas week. I don't know, this might be my last episode for 2025, but 2025 has been an incredible year. So many things that I never dreamt were going to happen in 2025. And I have a lot of you to thank for that. So as we close this year out, I just wanted to make sure that I put that out there to each and every one of you who listen. Maybe if you're traveling, hopefully this will give you something to listen to. And today I'm going to do round two of all the questions that you asked. I thought about waiting and doing this next month and doing a different topic, but I thought, nope, this is a great way to close out the year because I did not get through all of them last time. And y'all truly did ask me some great questions, ones that made me have to pause and think. I learned so much from each and every one of you as well, and I'm super grateful for that. So let's dive in. I'm going to pick up where we left off. I made a little note here of where to start. Okay, here we go. First question. I know GHKCU can be done upper glute sub-Q, but I also pin others there, i.e. tirzepatide. I think what you're asking is, can you inject other peptides in the glute area and not just in the abdomen, which I know is the common place that you hear of? The answer is yes. I usually exclusively inject in the glute because when you're lean in the midsection, it tends to leave bigger bumps. I try to avoid that. And you can't see it so much in the glute, and most people have more fat there. So the answer is yes, you can inject there. What is the best stack for people with Hashimoto's and other autoimmune diseases? This is a good question and one I get quite a bit. When it comes to Hashimoto's, the real issue is not just the thyroid, it's the immune system attacking it. I like to recommend thymosin alpha 1 because it's studied for how it helps immune signaling. So instead of overstimulating or suppressing the immune system, it helps guide it towards better balance and immune tolerance, which is key for autoimmune conditions like Hashimoto's. I also like recommending KPV because it's a powerful anti-inflammatory peptide, and it's researched for its ability to calm things like inflammatory cytokines and reduce immune-driven inflammation that can irritate things like the thyroid. We know that a lot of autoimmune stuff stems from chronic systemic inflammation. That's where the KPV comes in. The thymosin alpha 1 and the KPV are often a very supportive combo, and I typically see people do really well on it. I tell people to start with half the dose for the thymosin alpha 1 just to make sure that you're going to tolerate it okay and it doesn't cause a flare-up or cause you to be more symptomatic. I'm always a believer in starting really slow on that. All right. Okay. How do I get the most from a GLP? Or how do you get the most from your GLP? That's a good question. And it's not just a singular answer. There's a lot of things that I think is super important when you're taking a GLP that often people just overlook. Because look, we all want that easy magic button that let's just take this injection once a week. All of a sudden you've met your goal weight and all those things. But GLPs are far more reaching than just weight loss. I don't even really like to consider them a weight loss peptide, even though that's why they're popular, because they do so many other things. The biggest issue I see is people don't change their lifestyle. The GLP peptides only get you so far. You have to be eating enough protein. You have to be hitting the gym. You have to be making those lifestyle changes. If you're not willing to do that, then you're wasting your time because ultimately it's going to backfire on you. And you can't just keep taking a GLP at higher doses and expecting the results you want if you're not making any other changes in your life. That can often be overwhelming. So when I consult with people, I encourage them to start slow, start with one thing. I did a podcast very early on when I first started doing this a couple of years ago. Please forgive me if you go back and listen to it. I've learned a lot since then, but it was about the one thing, focusing on the one thing. So you get on a GLP and maybe you're not ready to hit the gym, but start with your protein. Say, I'm going to get 1 gram per desired lean mass body weight that I want. If you weigh 180 pounds and you want to weigh 140 pounds, try to eat 140 grams of protein every day. Start with that one thing. And then once you do that, and that GLP is going to help take away that food noise, then you start layering in, I'm going to get 10,000 steps in. Maybe you start with 5,000, but then you start getting the movement in, and then you can start getting the stamina to do the strength training and all that. And start with one thing and build off that. Don't overwhelm yourself with trying to do it all at once, but that's going to really help you get the most out of your GLP. Taurine is a really good supplement. I mentioned this last time. The recommended dose is pretty high, like 1 to 2 grams. I always get confused. Let me look real quick. Okay, 2 grams is what I take every day. I've heard people taking as high as 5 grams. I think 2 is probably plenty. But it in general helps peptides work more effectively. And there's more and more research that's coming out about how taurine is just a really good supplement. So that's something you could consider. I've heard people say that an aloe supplement can help with the gastrointestinal issues some people have on the GLPs. But really, lifestyle changes are what's going to help you. Your nutrition is the first piece, and then your workouts will be the second. How to talk to others, i.e. doctor/family, about peptides we're using. This is a great question. And I always say you can start with peptides are just short chains of amino acids. And they're signaling molecules that your body already uses to communicate. So they're wildly different than pharmaceuticals that most doctors and most of your family members are going to be more well-versed in or more comfortable with, which is crazy if you think about it. It's the pharmaceuticals that are so harmful. And if we can use the peptides to keep us from having to use pharmaceuticals, we're going to live a longer, healthier, more fulfilling life. But people that don't understand peptides aren't going to know that. And in some ways, it's an uphill battle. I'm not going to lie. So I would say if you have a doctor that's not supportive of your use of peptides, find a functional practitioner. Normally, they are more versed and more open to peptides. Don't just stick with a doctor that's not going to listen to you and has no knowledge of this. You can't expect people that don't have any knowledge of it to think that it's okay to inject yourself with something. If you put yourself in their shoes and think about how you thought about that or would have thought about that before you really understood peptides, you can understand why it's sometimes a difficult conversation to have. But you pay your doctor to treat you and to help you with your health optimization and longevity and wellness plan. So if that doctor is not working for you, be empowered to change that and find one that will. As far as family members, I don't really think you can worry about that. I have family members that think I'm cuckoo. They love me and I love them, but we're just not going to see eye to eye. So I quit trying to plead my case. If they ask me questions, I answer them. And lots of times people will say, man, your skin looks great. What are you doing? Or how do you stay in shape at your age? And how do you keep the weight off at your age? That's a really easy segue to start talking about peptides. And living by example sometimes can be the best thing you can do without saying a singular word. So you have to advocate for yourself with your healthcare providers and let your family and friends see you live your life in a way that makes them attracted to that and they want to know more. You're not even really having to defend it. They want whatever it is you have. That has been my experience with that. Next question. How do you know what is working and what's not if you stack something like Clo with Cardiolax? Is it better to do one than the other? I have been on Clo for 1 week and I noticed slight weight gain. How do you know what's working and what's not? You don't. And that's the easy question. I always tell people to start separately with peptides so you know it works for you. However, I'll give you an example where I break that rule. My mother-in-law fell yesterday and I'm heading to our family ranch tomorrow and I will see her. And I'm bringing some peptides with me and I'm going to stack them. But she is in pain and injured and it's right before the holidays, so she's not going to go see a doctor right now. And I just want to get her healed up as quickly as possible. I'm not going to waste the time when she's in pain and discomfort. I know she needs healing and I'm going to throw everything I've got at her. If you have some little aches and pains here and there, and you're taking the Clo, see if it works for you. That might work entirely on its own. Or maybe the Clo got you to a certain point in healing something, but you didn't fully get there. So then you layer in something like Cardiolax, and that might be what actually pushes you over the edge. Oftentimes, you're not going to get the benefit you want with these on their own. but combined you will. And so you kind of have to play around with it. So that's probably not the best answer, but it's the one I'm giving you. Okay. And then on the weight gain, that would not be normal, but I've learned never to say never with these things. That's just not typical. Let me say that. I guess in theory, if your body is recalibrating and these signaling peptides are doing their thing, you could potentially be retaining some water. The body's just holding on to some things as you're recalibrating. And maybe you've seen a little bit of weight gain. I don't know for sure. It should subside after a little bit of use. Hang in there and see if that dissipates. I don't know if that's actually due to the peptide or not. All right. Could you take tesafine a day during the week that you for the week? Yeah, because the CAGRI, its full impact doesn't happen immediately. That is a lot of appetite suppression if you're taking both. Be careful and make sure you're getting enough protein. They do totally different things, work on different pathways. There really shouldn't be much interaction. The main reason people take those is for the appetite suppression. In theory, tesafine can give you an energy boost where the CAGRI can make you tired. So in theory, those may offset each other. You have to be your own N of one in that scenario and see what works best for you. Because I also don't know, like the tesafenzine for me makes me super jittery and a little bit nauseous. So it's not my favorite personally, although I know people that swear by it and love it. CAGRI makes me super tired. So I try not to take that on the regular, but I do. I've taken both of them. I have used both of them. My point in saying this is you really have to just figure out what works best for you. Okay. Hi, Tara. I have cycled multiple stats of peptides over the past 9 months, beginning with HRT. Okay, so hormone replacement therapy. I'm super happy to say that I have slowly and with proper nutrition, exercise, fitness routines, finally lost the excess fat I've been carrying around for 15 years. Awesome. I have lost 40 pounds and I'm now approached on a regular basis by women asking what I do to work out and if I compete. Also amazing. My question is this, how do I continue to cycle peptides for the many benefits they offer as far as recovery, immunity, DNA repair, energy, neurological benefits, reduction of cholesterol levels without continuing to lose weight? Do I just concentrate on increasing my muscle or to balance with weight loss? Do I minimize dosing? Do I do shorter cycles? Many of the peptides I use have the benefit of weight loss, but I can't really keep losing weight. Thank you. Here's what I'll say about that. Yes, some of these peptides can help optimize your metabolism and could cause you to lose some weight, but the GLPs are the main ones. So if you're on a GLP and you're concerned about losing more weight, get off of it for a while. You can always cycle back on it. Like I said earlier, it's got amazing benefits, but I would get off of it for a while. I don't know which ones you're taking because you didn't list that. But even things like MOTC, 5-amino-1, MQ, AOD, those all help with releasing fat stores and leaning out. So do the growth hormones, secretagogues, but you don't really see significant weight loss with any of those. They're going to work on different things. The MOTC's prime goal is to help your mitochondria and give you energy boost. AOD and 5-amino-1 MQ give you energy, but also help with stubborn fat, which it sounds like you've had success getting rid of, so maybe you don't cycle those. The growth hormone ones would be great to help with things like building lean muscle mass, and I definitely would focus on that. But the truth is, if you're eating enough protein, your weight should stabilize and you should not be losing weight. If you're really getting your nutrition where it needs to be, there is a tipping point where your weight will stabilize and you're just not going to lose anymore. So I don't know that would be a giant concern if your nutrition truly is in check. And when I'll repeat this, the gold standard, this is my opinion, of course, is trying to get 1 gram of protein per desired lean body mass. So if you weigh 140 pounds and you want to stay at 140 pounds, eat 140 grams of protein. And I can promise you, you're probably not going to lose weight if you're doing that. You should be able to beautifully maintain it and be very healthy and have great muscle mass and body composition. But I wouldn't worry so much if you're doing that about the weight loss. What are your thoughts on methylene blue? I've heard so many good things about it, especially women with menopause. Great question. So let's talk about what methylene blue is. It's actually a synthetic compound. It was originally used as a dye and later adopted in medicine for things that I'm not going to go into. It is FDA approved for specific blood disorders, and it's widely talked about in this longevity and wellness space for its role as a mitochondrial miser, meaning it helps your cells produce more energy more efficiently. there is some emerging research that says it can be supportive during menopause because it supports brain clarity by it crosses that blood-brain barrier and supports mitochondrial efficiency in the brain cells, which helps with things like brain fog, focus, memory challenges that we often get with these hormone shifts in menopause. It can also help with energy and fatigue. It can enhance things like ATP production. So when we get that perimenopause, menopause fatigue, it can help with that. There is some emerging research that suggests that it may influence hypothalamic signaling and neurotransmitters involved in temperature regulation, which I think is super interesting. This can help with things like hot flashes in some individuals. So there's a lot of reasons why it's great for women in perimenopause and menopause. Also with collagen production, there's some research coming out about that. All the good stuff. You definitely want to cycle it. I cycle it. You want to remain sensitive to it, but you can overshoot the mitochondria and it can start causing more oxidative stress than it is. So it end up being more harmful than it is productive. So you definitely want to cycle it for 1 to 3 months, followed by a break of a month or two, and then cycle back on. This also helps prevent tolerance to it. Be aware that it is a potent MAO inhibitor, so it can dangerously interact with things like SSRI. So you want to be really careful about that as well. But overall, I think it's great. Maybe something that I end up carrying at some point, the Peptique. But yeah, I love methylene blue. Big fan. Okay. This question I get a lot. Can you have wine or alcohol while taking peptides, or does it affect it negatively? Look, I'm not going to be the biggest hypocrite on the planet and tell you that I don't drink wine. I love a good glass of wine. I'm not going to lie. It's probably my biggest vice. Can it negatively affect peptides? Absolutely, it can. So let's be honest about that as well. If you're drinking a couple glasses of wine a week or whatever, you're going to be just fine. If you're drinking every night, it can wildly inhibit the peptide's ability to be effective. You can offset that with things like injectable glutathione, which I recommend, especially this time of year when you probably are overindulging a little bit. But when you're putting something that is technically a toxin in, your body's going to focus on removing that toxin and not on the peptides doing their job. It just blunts the effectiveness of them. So yeah, definitely something to keep in mind if you want to get the most out of your peptides. Other thing I will say is things like GLPs, they are finding, are having a really positive effect on people that struggle with drinking too much, and same way that it helps them not eat as much, calms that dopamine activity, that impulse control, it calms that down. We are finding that it really can help with people that have addiction issues or even just a problematic habit. Hi, Tara. My question is regarding GLPs and Rita specifically. I know people talk about not cycling GLPs in the same 8 weeks on, 8 weeks off cycle. But can you clarify more about what appropriate cycles would look like to keep from being desensitized? What doses are we talking about when referring to microdosing for non-weight loss benefits rather than cycling off? And can you cycle between higher weight loss doses and microdoses without cycling off at all in order to continue receiving the other benefits? Thanks so much. Great question. But let's back up the first one. I know people talk about not cycling GLPs in the same 8 weeks cycle. Can you clarify more about the appropriate cycles would look like? This is a hard one because this is different for everyone. If you are at your goal weight and you're not on it for weight loss, I answer a couple of questions in one shot here. If you haven't reached your goal weight yet, I would say you need to stay on it and not cycle off of it, but find an effective dose that's working for you at the lowest level and try not to continue to titrate up. So you may want to add something like a Cagri. I know we're going to be carrying the oral version or the full prawn. I'm not saying that, but those of you who know this stuff know what I'm talking about. I've heard that that's been extremely helpful in people breaking through their plateaus, which we will have probably in the next couple of weeks. By the first of the year, we'll have in the inventory. So keep that in mind. Those hit in a different way, so they can come in and be very supportive of people at a plateau without having to increase their GLP dose. I would stay on it until you get to your goal weight. If you want to cycle off of it, you can cycle off of it for a couple of months at a time. Usually people do okay doing that. Maybe you do a tezofensine or something like that to help with appetite control or the oral GLP. Those are things to consider. If you want to stay on a microdose, I have a love-hate relationship with this conversation because it means so many different things to different people. And you're going to hear 25,000 different protocols on how to do this. And it varies from GLP to GLP. I don't necessarily want to get into what a microdosing protocol looks like. That's a whole different episode on its own, but you would break a very low dose up to a couple of times a week, sometimes three times a week. I've heard of some people doing it every day, although I don't really know about that. I've also heard about people framing microdosing as, well, I do it every 10 days or every 2 weeks instead of every week. So you can see where this conversation isn't super clear cut, but I would say just on a very low dose where you're not necessarily feeling like the appetite suppression, but it's keeping your inflammation and all that down. And yes, that's what I do. I'll stay on a low microdose, but then I'll titrate back up if I feel like I have some pounds creeping back on, or like in the holidays right now where the food noise comes screaming back in because we've got all the cookies and stuff in front of us. And so it really helps with that. So I'll titrate back up. And then after the new year, I'll go back down. Some people will not do that. And then they've gained 5 to 10 pounds over the holidays or more. And they need to titrate up after the first of the year. My point is, yes, you can play around with this so you can remain sensitive to it and figure out what works best for you. I feel like that's clear as mud. I apologize, but it's just not a super straightforward answer for everyone. You really have to be your own N of one here and figure out what works for you. Okay, regarding the growth hormone peptides, I did an 8-week cycle. I definitely gained some muscle, which I love, but I also retained a lot of water the entire time. And my joints were pretty creaky for weeks after cycling off. I only went up to 200 mcgs for a short time and then stayed at 100 mcgs for most of my cycle. I'm wondering if those side effects are just an annoying part that we push through, or if they signal that the growth hormone peptides aren't good for my body. I know my IGF-1 is already pretty high, so is it possibly dangerous for me to continue to cycle these? If your IGF is already high and you're getting these side effects that stem from your IGF getting too high, this may not be a good fit for you. If your IGF got high because of the growth hormones, you just need to stay off of them for a little while. Some people are more sensitive to the water retention and the creaky joints than others. I don't get the creaky joints. I definitely get the water retention. My husband gets the opposite when he takes these. So it really just depends on the individual. But if you know that your IGF-1 is already really high, then you might consider skipping this one, unfortunately. Okay. Would love to hear your thoughts on the efficacy of adding certain peptides to the same syringe right before injecting to reduce the amount of needle pricks, and also the efficacy of preloading syringes either before travel or even overnight to save time in the morning. I don't like preloading syringes at all for a number of reasons, but when you travel, it's really not hard to stick a vial in your bag on ice or either unreconstituted and reconstituted when you get there and put it in your mini fridge or the refrigerator wherever you're staying. And it's easier to keep one or two vials cold than multiple syringes cold. So I think it's easier to travel that way. But the pH of these things and the way that these work, they're not always compatible. And so I'm not a big fan of preloading overnight and letting them sit together all night, even if they're known to be safe. I would say the ones that you can get away with that are more of the healing peptides, like the KPVs, the BPCs, the TB500s. Some of the other ones like the AODs, the 5-aminos, the NAD, I would not. So it just gets really complicated really fast. The other thing I will say is what I do is I will load several things in the syringe at the same time and then inject it immediately. If they're not sitting together too long, typically speaking, it's okay. For example, right now I'm doing 5-amino-1 and AOD9604. And the AOD9604 in particular can be super sensitive, but I load those two in the same syringe and then I immediately inject. I wouldn't want those loaded and sitting overnight or longer. It's not super straightforward, but hopefully that gives you a little bit of clarity. Okay, I microdosed semaglutide, didn't even go to the starting dose. I did it for the mental health benefits. It made my mood more even keel. That's awesome. I started Retta for weight loss and stopped the semaglutide. I'm currently on 2 milligrams, but I do not feel the same mental health benefits from the Retta. I mentioned this to my doctor and she told me to also microdose the Sema along with the Retta. What are your thoughts? you should be getting weight loss off both of these, and you probably never got to a high enough dose on the semaglutide in order to lose weight. I do find that people that have been on semaglutide or tirzepatide have a harder transition over to retatrutide. I would say try tirzepatide and see if you can kill two birds with one stone, get the mental health benefits you're wanting and lose the weight, as opposed to combining both. When you combine both, there's an overlap of semaglutide, one of the components, and tirzepatide, two of the components, if you were to overlap it with retatrutide. I know people are doing this, but it just seems a little overkill. If you could take one and get both the benefits you're wanting, that makes more sense to me. So maybe talk to your doctor about starting tirzepatide, because I don't know that I would combine semaglutide and retatrutide. Okay, I think I answered this one already. This is about mixing peptides. I just answered that. CMAX, specifically the nasal version. What are the benefits of this method versus injectable? I know everyone would love to not poke themselves so much with the needles, but it's just not as bioavailable. We just added CMAX today to the Pepti collection of products, and we're adding Salink pretty soon. I immediately got the question, will you be offering the nasal spray? I probably will, just because so many people ask about it. But if I were going to take that and wanting the maximum benefit out of it, because you're already spending the money, I would inject it. I would not do the nasal spray. It's just not as good. There you have it. I get this question a lot. How long can you keep backwater after opening in fridge or cool, dark place? There's a couple of questions here. Let's start with that one. The rule of thumb, the gold standard, is 28 days past the initial syringe going into the vial. And I don't necessarily disagree with that. Have I kept backwater longer than that and used it? Yes. I think based on some recent research that's come out, it's best to keep it in the fridge in a dark place. It just keeps it from having as much opportunity to get microbes and stuff like that in it that could cause problems with the backwater. Best practice, 28 days in the fridge and dark. Hopefully that helps answer that. The next part of that question was, how long should you stay on AOD and should you switch cycle with 5-amino? Switch cycle. I don't know what, I'm not sure what you mean by that, but AOD, I actually love pairing with 5-amino, but 8 to 12 weeks on AOD, I had to take a higher dose. If you get my peptide guide, it says 300 mcgs, which is a gold standard. But again, this is where you have to play around what works for you. I actually doubled that with the 5-amino 1-MQ and got great results. I need to do an episode on that. But yeah, just for whatever that's worth. Okay. What peptides need to be refrigerated and which do not? All peptides need to be refrigerated. There's an easy answer. When to freeze peptides and what do you freeze them in? You want to freeze peptides if they're not reconstituted. They are reconstituted, meaning you've added the reconstitution solution. You cannot freeze them, but you can freeze them if they're still in the lyophilized powder form. And that will protect them. You can store them for years and they will not lose their potency when you put them in the freezer. And so freeze them if you're not going to use it within 30 days. Go ahead and put the powder, though, even if it's unreconstituted, in the refrigerator, too. That's just the best practice. And what do you freeze them in? I have a plastic peptide vial holder that I put all mine in. It keeps the light completely off of them. And I put them in the freezer that way. So there you go. You can get this on Etsy. Just get on Etsy and Google, like, peptide vial holder, and you'll see what I'm talking about. I don't know why Etsy's so popular for them, but for some reason they are. Okay, question about desensitization. Desensitization, can't say that today for some reason, to GLPs. I've heard going off and on and back on or even switching meds can make the second round / med less effective. I found this to be personally true for me by switching from Sema to TERS after a 4-month break and maybe my body less responsive to the TERS. This has made me nervous about potentially switching to Retta in the future. Is there truth to this? I know that people have a really hard time switching from Sema and TERS to Retta. So I would say if TERS is working for you, just stay on it. We all talk about Retta like it's the best one out there. The data shows it's amazing, but the data is really great on tirzepatide too. And the longer I do this, the more I'm finding that a lot of people just do better on it. I don't know that I've heard much about it being less effective if you go back to it after trying a different one. If I'm being honest, we stay on these things for so long. If you've been on Sema for a while, and now you're on Tirzepatide, your body's been on this. So when you first take it, you feel super hyper responsive to it. But after a while, you just don't, because it becomes your new normal. And I find this to be true with a lot of people. But if you can get to a place where the Tirzepatide is really working well for you, I don't know that I would make matters more complicated by switching. That's my personal belief, and just working with lots and lots of people and what I've experienced with them. I would love to talk more about women's hormones, including testosterone, dosages, labs requirements, and access to it. That's not something that I do, so I'm really not going to go into detail about that. I used to do all of that, but I certainly do not have access to hormones, nor will I ever have access to hormones. You really need to work with a functional practitioner who specializes in hormones. If you're working with a solid functional practitioner that specializes in hormones, they're going to know exactly what labs to get, dosages that you will need based on your individual labs. Without looking at someone's labs, there's no way to say this is the amount you need. So this is a super complicated question, but yeah, you need to get with a great functional healthcare provider that specializes in hormones. Is there any concern about cancer and the CLO ingredients? I know they say theoretically it could increase cancer cells, but if I'm assuming I do not have any current cancer, is it safe to take? The truth is that we don't have enough research on this. If you look at BPC-157, which is what I'm assuming you're talking about, there is some concern that it can cause angiogenesis, which if you have a tumor, could cause that tumor to grow faster. And so that's where the big concern is. There's also been research that suggests that BPC-157 helps fight cancer and kill cancer. So we just don't know enough. I would say if you have a lot of cancer history in your family, or you're concerned about it at all, then don't risk it. But that is a very personal choice that you have to make. There's just not 100% yes, this is the answer. It's also why it's really important to cycle these things so you're not just staying on them constantly. Next question. Ellen, without or with DAC, why and who is a good candidate? The with or without DAC, meaning that's the CJC 1295 component, not Ipamorelin. Ipamorelin or the CJC 1295 with DAC lasts a very long time in your system. So it lasts for days, whereas CJC with no DAC only lasts for 30 minutes. A lot of people think, I want the longer one. Actually, no. The one without DAC pulses more like our natural growth hormone. It works in a much more natural way with our bodies, which what makes it so beautiful. And the Ipamorelin has a little bit longer half-life, so the two combined work really well synergistically. The one that stays in your body for a really long time, the one with the DAC, that's when you start seeing higher IGF levels, more side effects, that sort of thing. So I'm personally not a huge fan of that. I know people like that. I'm not a huge fan of that. As far as who's a good candidate, I'm not going to speak to the with DAC, but without DAC, if you want better sleep, you want all the benefits of growth hormone release naturally, like better sleep, better hair, better skin, better nails, better muscle synthesis, then you're a good candidate. This same person also asks, how do you know when you're ready to move to a GLP-3? I don't really know the front end of that question. I'm going to skip that one because I'm not really sure what the question is there. What peptide can help reduce inflammation or combat PCOS? 100% GLP. I have seen GLPs transform women who have PCOS time and time again. So if you struggle with PCOS, get on a GLP, work with someone that can help you navigate through that. It can be a huge game changer for you. What peptides can help with infertility? Kisspeptin is a good one. It helps women release the luteinizing hormone and the follicle stimulating hormone, which plays a huge role in estrogen production and fertility. So that is a really good one to do some research on your own about fertility. I've seen it help both men and women with fertility issues. When you have lots of bases to touch, what's a good way to go about mapping out a schedule to keep the overwhelm down? Sometimes I struggle to sort out which organ or function to pay attention to next when everything feels so important. This is a great question. I always say focus on your goal. What is your number one goal? If energy is your goal, focus on mitochondrial support. If you're really struggling with energy, I would start with an SS31, then move on to maybe a MOTC or a MOTC NAD cycle. People think we have to do all these at one time. You may be able to layer in the background a clue if you have an injury. Those work on different things. So I often tell people, let's get your energy started. Let's start you on an SS31. Let's start to get you healed. Maybe start you on the background on Glow, if skin rejuvenation, or just GHKCU on its own, skin rejuvenation. Here's a double-edged sword here. GHKCU, we know, impacts over 4,000 different genes. If you've got a lot of mitochondrial issues and you're working on the gene expression that GHKCU has, sometimes you might get a little bit of overlap and get some fatigue and stuff like that with that. So you just have to be careful and take things very... I always like to start to get people very metabolically healthy, maybe a GLP. Then let's focus on your energy. Oftentimes, if we get you metabolically stable, your energy is going to naturally increase. Then let's work on the mitochondrial peptides. Or some of my... You're finding that you have more energy. You've leaned out some. Now let's layer in growth hormone peptides to help with the body composition aspect, because now you've lost the weight and now you have the energy to be in the gym, which is going to make those growth hormone peptides, the testosterone, epinephrine, and CJC, even more effective, because you're going to get better workouts. And if you start to see the trend of where I'm going, you can have maybe something like the Glow or GHKCU going on in the background to help with skin rejuvenation, repair, that sort of thing. So it's not a one-size-fits-all, definitely something you have to figure out for yourself, but stay very goal-focused and then cycle through your goals. I took thymus and alpha-1 to boost my immune system, increase neutrophils, but it didn't work. I guess in theory it can work on that, but that's not exactly what it does. So maybe it's not too surprising that you didn't see a huge shift there. I don't really know of something else at the top of my head that would work for that, if I'm being honest. Let's see, what happens to the body when coming off retatrutide? Does late weight loss come back even if maintaining optimal eating habits? Yes, it very well could. I tell people to start looking at the GLPs a little bit differently. Think of hormone replacement therapy. As we get older, our hormones start to decline. So we give ourselves hormones in order to optimize our hormones like they were when we were younger, so you get all the benefits of what that means. GLPs are no different. Our insulin sensitivity or insulin resistance, how our body regulates our blood glucose level and our insulin levels declines as we get older. So when you give yourself a GLP, you're telling your body to perform in a very optimized way, whether you've got some more severe metabolic stuff going on or it's just the sign of aging. If you strip yourself of the hormones you've been taking, what happens? Your hormones tank and you get all the side effects back. It's not any different with GLPs. You want to hit your certain goals with it and then find a maintenance dose or cycle off and on it. But I do find when people start to cycle off and on it, you're more than likely at some point in time, you're going to see the weight creep back on, even if you're perfect with your diet and exercise, not because you're not doing all the right things, because your body can't respond metabolically the way it did when it was younger. Okay? I'm sorry, I'm trying to get through maybe some of the bigger questions. What are your thoughts on injecting pens versus syringes? I don't have one. They both work. Figure out what works best for you. Also, are the same peptides you could stack with the same syringe or pen? We talked a little bit about that. I'm not going to do that. Can you microdose Epitalon longer than a month? I know people cycle off and on, but what are the consequences of not cycling off? You don't want to do that. You want to cycle off for sure, because Epitalon works by signaling the body's longevity and repair pathways, particularly around telomeres and their circadian rhythm. So because it's a signaling peptide, it's not meant to be run continuously. Staying on it long-term can blunt the signal and reduce responsiveness. You definitely want to cycle. There's no benefit to staying on it past that. Also tried oxytocin at 10 units. Got the worst cramps I've ever had. Is there a way around this? I don't know what 10 units mean. So when y'all send me questions in the future, don't send me units. Send me MCGs or milligrams. That's how I know what you're actually taking. I will say if you're dosing according to the protocol guide, the recommended dose is 5 units, I believe. It just takes a tiny amount of that oxytocin. I took too much once and I got the worst headache ever. So we really aren't meant to take more. The way to get around that is take less. Hopefully that answers that. I'm really trying to get through all these, y'all. I just started listening to your podcast today. I'm wondering if most peptides need to be cycled. Yes, they do. If you want to know the cycles, shoot me an email and I will send you my peptide guide. Specifically interested in GHKCU, CJC-1295. I'm pretty sure I need to cycle off CJC, but not sure about the GHKCU. Okay, CJC, yes, for sure. GHKCU is not a classic on-off signaling peptide, and so a lot of people say you can take it long-term. I don't do that. I just like to cycle through these things. That being said, if you are staying on it long-term, you definitely want to take a zinc. Hey, I always say that wrong. sounds like I'm saying pickle, but you guys know what I mean. About 15 milligrams if you're going to stay on it, because the two need to be in balance to work effectively. You don't want to waste the peptide. Normally, if you're taking a good multivitamin, you're going to have about 15 milligrams of that zinc in there. But if you're not, just get one separately. If you are on Retta and Tessmorelin and slowly go off them, but continue your weightlifting, cardio, health, eating lifestyle, do you gain your weight back? Yes, most people do. And I answered why. I know, I wish I could tell you they don't, but in my experience, most people do. I'm looking for some guidance on scalp psoriasis. I only break out on my scalp and on my hairline. Moisture is my enemy. If I sweat or allow my hair to air dry, I'm guaranteed to break out. You said you tried the topical KPV, but it didn't work. You thought it made it worse. Sometimes it can make the initial thing worse as your body's responding to it, and then it actually does work. My son had something similar, and I ended up taking him to a dermatologist, and they did a scraping to figure out what it was. And it ended up being more of a fungus that's really hard to kill by your typical things. So you may need to get an antifungal, a topical medication. That might actually be a real game changer, because he was the exact same way, broke out the exact same way that you're talking about. You could try a GHKCU topical. That might work more efficiently. I want to know if anyone who is on Ozempic has added a peptide or stack to aid in weight loss. I am a type 2 diabetic on Ozempic for 3 years now, no major weight loss. Just want to start to kick/boost to help in that area. I'm going to add cagrilintide to my regimen. Okay, I would recommend trying tirzepatide because of all the reasons I just mentioned. You may struggle more with that one. But the fact that you've had no weight loss on Ozempic makes me think Ozempic just is a, it's just like semaglutide. So it's only hitting one of the components. Tirzepatide hits two, and then retatrutide hits three. If you can get your insurance to pay for it because you're type 2 diabetic, because Retta's not out yet, I would definitely switch to tirzepatide before adding cagrilintide and see if that helps you lose weight. Okay, in a hypothetical scenario where GLPs are no longer available in the research peptide space, let's pray that didn't happen. Which peptides would you recommend as possible replacement for fat loss, appetite suppression? I was thinking Tessa, Cagri, Tessmorelin, cagrilintide, and AOD, but I know that there are other tools like L-carnitine that we use as well. Also, are there any of these that you would not recommend be taken at the same time or just cycled at different times? Okay, I'm going to try to answer this quickly. The olefiprine, I'm so butchering that, but this oral version could be a real game changer. So that could potentially be something super helpful in this scenario if that does happen. These other ones that you mentioned really aren't weight loss peptides. Lintide can help with appetite control, but if the GLPs go away, the cagrilintide is probably going to go away too. So that oral form's going to be a good fit, and possibly something like tesofenzine. Tesmorelin's not a weight loss one. AOD's not a weight loss one. Maybe those other ones I mentioned would be better fits. Ipamorelin, DAC, or no DAC? I think, how do we choose? Ipamorelin doesn't have DAC, meaning CJC1295, which I already answered. And episode, I heard you discuss NAD plus MOTC5 amino in context of fatigue. Oh gosh, this is a long question. Really caught my attention. I'm 43, post-hysterectomy. The tiredness and emotions can be debilitating at times. I know you can't give individualized medical advice. No, I cannot, but I'd love general guidance. If someone was pointing me towards first steps framework, what would that be? Okay, I'm going to do a podcast on this pretty soon from personal experience about ADD or ADHD, and I would do NAD. It helped me get off ADHD medication that I had been on for years and years, and it's also, I've seen it, people that I've worked with, it helped them. So that would be the first place I would start, because it'll also help with energy and mental clarity and focus. There are other ones like Dihexa, things like that too, but the NAD, at least in my experience, I know that really works. So that would be your first step, because that was one of the questions you asked. Are there specific episodes, resources you recommend? Not currently on that, but like I said, that's on my list of episodes I want to do. And when you say get blood work done, what lab markers do you think are best baseline for fatigue, perimenopause, and overall health with a clinician? Get with a functional practitioner that will run a functional blood work panel. That's going to be full thyroid, full hormones, all the things. They're going to look at inflammation markers like C-reactive protein, homocysteine, methylmalonic acid to see how you are methylating your B vitamins. Start there. It's not just get these five markers. It's like 100 markers that you really want to look at and see where you're at. Also look at deficiencies like magnesium, vitamin D, potassium imbalance, iron, ferritin. All that can be a big play can be big culprits in what's potentially going on. Get with a good functional practitioner who will run those full panels on you. Okay, so this person had to properly read 100-unit syringe and MCGs versus MGs. I remember this was very confusing for me in the beginning as well. And I think you mentioned you got confused when you saw the dosing in MCGs on the chart. That's because MCGs are usually used for anything that's under 1 milligram. So 500 MCGs is half a milligram. 250 MCGs is a quarter of a milligram or 0.25 milligrams. 750 MCGs is 0.75 or 3/4 of a milligram. And 1,000 MCGs is 1 milligram. So 1,000 MCGs is 1 milligram. So if you're seeing anything that is an MCG format, think of that as under 1 milligram. Most people refer to these things if it's under 1 milligram in the MCG version. Hopefully that helps clarify that. I am late to this. If this has already been asked and answered, can you safely take alternating microdoses of TERS and RETA? What would be some of the risks and benefits? What would appropriate dosing look like? Not going to speak to dosing on this because it's so different for everyone. I don't know what you've been taking. I don't know how that's been working for you. Yes, I have heard of people, I've never done it myself. I have heard of people alternating, like maybe 1 week doing TERS and the next week doing RETA because they want that appetite control from the TERS, but they want the fat burner glucagon element of the RETA. I don't think there's any harm in doing that, but you just need to see how you feel. I did do an episode recently about how RETA can really have your HRV tank, can cause sleep problems. Definitely, I would say take taurine again if you're going to do that. And yeah, that's all I'm going to say about that. I don't think there's a ton of risk. I definitely don't like the idea of taking those both at the same time, which I've heard people doing because there's too much overlap in my opinion. But I don't think there's any real risks to it. So I'm going to throw that out there. Okay, last question. Here we go, folks. This is not a peptide and you may not want to touch this topic. I love questions to start like that. But what do you think about nicotine as a nootropic and neuroprotective substance? There is very little info about it that isn't one extreme or the other. I'm not talking about smoking or vaping, which is absolutely very bad, just nicotine alone. Great question. I think for some people, it's really great. I know a lot of people, if you're not overdoing it, I'm going to totally rat my husband out here because he always has a nicotine pouch in his gum. It's just something that he started doing when he was young and I got him off the tobacco part of it. So that was our happy medium there. And he constantly has one in. Am I a fan of that? Absolutely not. Microdosing it, and I don't know off the top of my head what a microdose would be, but doing a couple hits of a little nicotine tablet, you can put them under the tongue or whatever, I think is totally fine. From the information that I know, don't send me a bunch of emails, please do your own research. I have actually tried this myself and it made me feel terrible. My brain chemistry does not work with that type of thing. But I have talked with probably thousands of people that say how great it is and how much they love it and how it really gets them through their day and helps them focus. So try it and see if it works for you. Just like everything else, in moderation, if you find that you're overdoing it, because I do think it can be addictive. If you're one of these people that has a very addictive nature, then maybe stay away from it. You don't need to add another vice. But if you're someone that just wants a little boost here and there throughout the day, then yeah, don't think there's anything wrong with it. And there's a lot of emerging research saying that it can actually be good for you. So we will end with that controversial note. And y'all, I went over, but I really wanted to get through all these questions. I'm so grateful for all of them. I'm hoping to do this once a month, if not every other month, depending on how many questions I get in. And I just wish you and yours the merriest Christmas ever, and that we focus on what the true meaning of Christmas is, and that's the birth of Christ. We spend time with our loved ones, family, and friends, and take a step back, take a breather, and enjoy some downtime. So if you don't hear from me between now and the new year, I'm working on new episodes. I might be able to squeeze one more out. Go share this podcast. Go sign up on the Peptique website with your email. I'll also put a little link in the Jot form. Go follow me on Instagram. That y'all support in those areas, I cannot even tell you, that really helps me continue to do the things that I love to do and share all this information with y'all. There's also a link to the Women's Peptide Collective if you haven't heard me talk about it ad nauseum. This is a group strictly for women to talk about all things peptide related. It's totally free. I'll put the link on the website there. I try to be as responsive as I can. There's some new things coming out this year where I'm hoping to do maybe some live type of calls or something like that. We'll see. Anyway, lots of good stuff coming for 2026 that I'm excited about. So, Merry Christmas, and until next time, y'all have a blessed day.